You're listening to the Platte River Bard.
Today, our episode is with an Omaha Theater legendary favorite. We were lucky enough to chat with Dick Mueller, who opened the Firehouse Dinner Theater, May 12th, 1972, in the old market of downtown Omaha. Back in its day, the Firehouse was one of the best of equity theater in Omaha, and to commemorate all the great times there, Dick Mueller has published a book written by himself and 25 others who worked at the Firehouse. All of them share about their most memorable experiences.
There was a time in which the Firehouse Dinner Theater grossed over $2 million a year. Will we ever see another era of equity theater in Omaha? One where creatives can make an actual living doing what they do best. One can only hope. In the meantime, we can reminisce about a time where theater in Omaha was king.
Hello, hello, and welcome to the Platte River Bard. This is Chris Berger.
And I'm Sherry Berger.
And we are here today. We are here with Dick Mueller.
Yay!
And he is here going to talk to us about his career a little bit, and also because he also has a book coming out.
Yay.
Called The Firehouse Memoir for, and I gotta get this all in because it's very important. For an entrepreneur in the arts, from nightclubs to theater, 'twas all showbiz to me, by Dick Mueller.
Yay.
Thank you very much for coming to talk with us here at Scooters. Thanks, Scooters.
Well, thank you for the invite.
Yes, this is such an honor to be able to spend this time with you.
Well, it's kind of a new chapter for me, and you're the first people to pick up on.
Yay!
Wanting to talk about it.
I was so excited to hear that you were doing a book. I didn't know that you've been working on this. How long has it been in the works?
Yeah.
About a year. My life is in that.
Really?
Yeah. I started about a year ago.
About a year, okay.
Yeah. And I didn't know what it would turn into.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I just started, as we talked earlier, moments that I did not want to write a book that said, you know, along this line, we did this, and then we did this, and then we did this, and then we did. I hate that kind of book.
Yeah. Sure, sure.
So I got fascinated with the notion of how moments, one moment in your life, can lead, if you're lucky enough to catch it, to so many other moments down the road. And that's what, when I got that notion, then I started writing about moments that led to other moments. And so it's sort of a montage. Now, I was very conscious. I did not want to leave anybody out of the book. So nobody is out of the book. But I hope nobody is offended because I don't write a story about them.
Sure.
I wrote stories about things who were problems that led to drama.
Sure.
But everybody that ever walked on that stage, or everybody who ever worked backstage, is in the book. So they're all represented, either listing all the stage managers, assistant stage, everybody's there. Mm-hmm. I was very conscious of not wanting to leave somebody out.
Right.
Though I was, you know, in the meat of what I wrote about incidents or moments that led to other moments. Mm-hmm. So.
And
I got other people. I've got guest writers. Took the burden off me.
Yeah.
Nice. Yeah.
I've got about 25, I think. People who wrote, people with a past with the Firehouse, and they wrote short, sometimes a little not so short, stories about their times there.
Oh, mm-hmm. Nice. That's really cool.
And you even start with growing up in Omaha.
Well,
so go a little James Lipton on you. You are from Omaha.
Yes, I was. Well, I was born in Columbus.
Okay.
And I left Columbus, a babe in arms, and basically grew up in Omaha because my folks finally, my dad was a musician all his life, and it was his trumpet that got him out of Columbus.
Mm.
And it was his trumpet that, I'm sure, led to meeting my mother. Mm-hmm. Who was born up in near Valentine, Nebraska, on a ranch.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And he was probably, this is, I wish I knew this, I wish he'd written a book. I'm sure they met at a dance hall because Dad was
right.
Playing with bands, touring.
Sure.
And that's how they met. There was as a story, but my brother told me this. He's a little older than I am, believe it or not. And supposedly, my dad was playing in this dance hall. I assume it was in the Sand Hills, in that area, because I'm sure Mom didn't, she was young. Anyway, supposedly the story goes, Dad leaned down next to the, at the edge of the stage where the band was playing, and asked this kid who that girl was over there. And the kid says, yeah, it's my sister. Hmm. And that's how I ended up calling that little kid my uncle, because that was Lenny. Anyway, so it was, they met there. They ended up settling in Omaha because of the Second World War. Dad got a job because musicians, the traveling bands went away. And he was a good provider for his family. He ended up grinding tools at the bomber plant in at Offutt during the war. So we grew up, my first recollections, Reese, basically are when I started school at Highland Elementary down in South Omaha. And that's where I, and then I moved, I don't know how many schools I went to. My parents were, my mom was a, she kept the family moving. I don't know why, I think she got bored. And so and basically we moved all over town. I did many different schools until high school. I spent all my high school years at Central.
At Central, yeah. Yeah, I was.
And that's where I met three other guys that we somehow, I have no idea how it happened, but we started singing together. We didn't know each other. We were in the choir together.
Yeah.
But we would meet in room 215, I believe it was, which was a study hall on the second floor of the east side of the Central High there, and before school. We'd go there and meet before school. And they had a little stage in one end with a piano, and we would, for some reason, we met there and started singing together.
Hmm.
And that's where my show business life began.
So that group was called the Style Masters.
Mm-hmm.
And your dad played trumpet, but you played trombone.
Well, I played at trombone. I was
decided to sing instead.
Played at trombone.
Interestingly, when we got drafted into the Army, we went. They drafted the quartet.
Yeah.
I mean, it was, that's an interesting story. I don't know how much I tell it in the book, but it was all set up before we got drafted. We'd been putting the draft off for quite a while, and we were working in. I tell this in the book. We were actually, we just finished a great recording session at Capitol in Hollywood, and we went over to Palm Springs to a great club called the Chi Chi back then, and it was a good club with a good band. We had, it was great, and we played there a week, and during that week we got two offers. One was to open at the Sands in Las Vegas in the big room, opened for Gordon and Sheila McRae. Wow, who knows what that might have, what that moment in our careers might have meant. But the other offer we got was get our asses into the Army because they were tired waiting for us.
Okay.
And fortunately, we ended up in the U.S. Army Field Band. Anyway, we ended up doing our, I spent a year and 10 months and 25 days in the Army.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And the group broke up. Actually, we changed the name of the group when we went east. And when we went east, we changed from Capitol to Epic.
Okay.
And our, the first, actually the only record we actually put out was called The Bachelor's Club, and we liked that name better, so we changed our name.
Ooh.
If you look for us on Epic, it's The Bachelors.
Oh.
And we recorded in their wonderful studio. Great session. Wow. Yeah. Unfortunately, we had two great cuts. And, you know, this, here's a moment. Looking back, the company, which was Epic, which was part of, I think, Columbia at the time. Anyway, they after we did our session of two songs, The Bachelor's Club and It's Funny on the other side, we went back to the Army, went back down to Washington where we were stationed. Excuse me. And they got all excited. Dance crazes were big back then, you know.
Okay,
and,
yes.
They got all excited, and they had us come back up and do a song called Do the Madison. And it was a terrible song, but they were all excited about trying to cash in on this. So they dropped It's Funny, which I really think might be the best cut we ever did. And they put out the Bachelor's Club. On the other side was this Do the Madison. And, you know, maybe for another group, it would have been terrific. But we were not that kind of group. And it just didn't fit us. And so it was kind of disappointing. And but they offered us a contract to do an album, which was a big step up, because everything we'd put out up to that point was 45s. I think we had like four or five releases on Capitol, and unfortunately we had just the one on Epic, but they offered us the opportunity to do an album, and we were approaching at the end of the service, our service obligation. Bob Larson and the group had already gotten married and left the group. We had a great replacement for him, Bob Hill. We like Bob's, I guess. And unfortunately, at the end of our service, we were trying to decide what to do. The music world had really, really changed. You'll appreciate this. First, Presley came along and just shook everything up. And a few years later, the Beatles changed everything all again. And so groups like ours, which sang popular music, and our heroes were the Mills Brothers and the Ames Brothers and the Four Lads and the Crew Cuts. And so we were trying to decide what we were going to do with our, were we going to go back to nightclubs? I loved working nightclubs. I just adored it. And we did that from 1955, basically, we got drafted in 59. We got drafted on April Fool's Day of 1959. Did you really? And then we got out of the service in 61, and we just decided to hang it up. So I came back to Omaha after the service and tried to decide what to do with the rest of my life.
So these were the years between 1959 and 1961-ish.
Well, 55, we graduated from Central.
Yeah.
We went to Sun Valley the next morning and started basically a life of wandering. Yeah.
Okay.
We got drafted in 59. So for 4 years, we toured the country playing nightclubs and recording and some concerts. It was fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, the moment that you knew that you liked theater, that happened later.
How do you know this?
I did a little bit of research.
Did you?
I stalk a little bit.
Well, I write about that in the book. That's why.
She talks.
And you haven't read the book yet.
I haven't.
Yeah,
I can't
wait. It was kind of it was a moment in my life. Mm-hmm. The group was in New York. We'd done a recording session, and for some reason, there was some time elapsed, and I had performed at Central High in the back row of the chorus of, I think it was the Mikado. That was my theater experience at high school. And Central has a pretty healthy history of theater, but I didn't get involved in theater there. Yeah. But when we were in New York, I had this day off for a few hours, and I saw a marquee, I noticed the theater district, and I bought a standing room only ticket to a show, and I stood for 3 hours.
Wow.
Easily 3 hours. And, you know, it changed my life.
Wow.
When I went in there, I don't know what I was expecting, but I really considered the ultimate entertainment experience the nightclub stage. Mm-hmm. And when I walked out 3.5 hours later, I found something else.
Yeah. Now, this production, it was a Broadway production?
Yeah, it was the original production of My Fair Lady.
My Fair Lady.
Yeah.
How can you do? Really?
Yeah. How can you do better than it? Now, it had played for a number of years. Rex Harrison and Julie Andrews were long gone.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Nevertheless, it changed my life.
So that's interesting, though. A standing room only ticket.
Yeah.
I don't think I've ever seen that before. That was common back then?
Yeah, I probably spent about $3 for it.
Yeah.
You know what a Broadway ticket is worth today?
Oh, yeah, my God. I know, hundreds.
It's just crazy.
Yeah, yeah.
Back then. I also second acted some when I was living in New York for that year. Mm-hmm. I used to occasionally second act. Do you know what that means?
Second act.
A show? Well, what you do is you go to the theater district, you look semi-dressed up, and you, at the intermission, the audience wanders out onto the sidewalk. And that's how they spend, because the lobbies are not big enough.
Oh.
So you insert yourself into that crowd, and at some point you'll find a program laying on the ground or something. You pick up the program, and when the crowd goes back in, you go back into it. And you go to the restroom, because you don't know what seats are taken and what seats aren't taken. So you go to the restroom so the audience is seated, and then you come back in and you find an empty seat and you sit down and watch the second act. Now, I saw this.
Got it.
I saw the second act.
That's
of
fantastic.
Ben Franklin in Paris twice. I never saw the first act.
All right.
But I saw Robert Preston do that wonderful speech about the
excellent
about the fly that was caught in a wine jug.
That, and, you know, that must have been your love for Music Man, because I know that was the first Firehouse Dinner Theater production I saw.
Well, it was one of the last productions at the Firehouse that I did,
And so after you came back from New York and you had this experience, you ended up doing theater here in town, and a little bit outside of town, too.
Yeah, I had all this experience on stage, and I guess I had a leg up at auditions. The Playhouse, I went to an audition. I don't know how I met the Filberts, the theater people, and I kind of fell in with the crowd somehow. Can't remember how. And I went to an audition at the Playhouse, and they cast me as some kind of a role in the Pajama Game, I think it was. And the only show I've ever dropped out of. I thought it might be better to sing in some bar in town. So I dropped out of that production. I'm not proud of that, but I wasn't playing a part that left him high and dry, I'm sure. Anyway, and then I did not do the nightclub thing again. But then I did... West Side Story was really actually the first thing I ever did was at the Red Lion, which was a bar on Farnham Street.
Yeah.
And a tiny little place, a jazz club. And Schoenbaum was doing theater, that couple. He ended up managing the Guthrie.
Oh.
I mean, if you know what the Guthrie is, it's to me, it's probably one of the premier theater groups in town, in Minneapolis, in the country.
Yeah.
Anyway, we used to have to schlep the grand piano off the stage, and we did a Sunday night show, and that one show, and that's the first time I played a role in, I played Pedro, I think, in, I can't remember the name of the show, it escapes me at the moment, a tiny little thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next thing I did was Tony in West Side Story over at Chanticleer.
Okay.
And that led to doing the Playhouse, the big show, Bye Bye Birdie, at the Playhouse. And I just went from one show to the next with all the theater groups in town.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then you won the Fonda McGuire Award for Man of La Mancha.
Yeah, Mary Jane and I did Man of La Mancha and got all kinds of accolades. It was great. And that's the last thing I did.
And then you won the Tourism Honor Award, the Henry Fonda Award.
Well, that was not for my acting. That was for the Firehouse. Actually, the Firehouse won that. We made our entered a contest, and they picked us. And it was a great honor.
So the Firehouse actually came to be in 1972, I read?
Right, May 12th, 1972.
Okay. So... What made you decide that you wanted to add food to theater? Did you see a lot of dinner theater before?
I had a friend here, and he was somehow involved with the food at a great theater that was being built in Minneapolis, Chanhassen. Mm-hmm. And I joined what was the original company at Chanhassen. That was my first experience with dinner theater. I mean, it probably is the premier facility in the country for dinner theater.
It's beautiful.
And I worked there about a year doing, it was great back then because now they run shows a year. But back then they ran shows like the Firehouse did for 6-8 weeks, you know. So it was great to work there as an actor because I must have done, I don't know, 3 or 4 or 5 shows there. Six shows maybe in that year. So that was my first experience with dinner theater. But there were, when they opened, when I went up there, I talk about this in the book, there was not a roof on the place. I think it seated 600 people.
Interesting.
And we rehearsed for 3 weeks for the opening show out in a shed, paint shed, not a very good atmosphere for rehearsing. But anyway, but they had, at one point, I think at least 4 theaters in that complex. Yeah. I don't know what it is now. Probably just the one. But it was a great facility, and I loved the people who started it. Mm-hmm. They were great.
So you had, the 70s were very good for the Firehouse, and you were, so for people who are listening that are younger than Chris and I, the Firehouse is the only Equity Theater that has been in Omaha.
Is it really? I didn't know that.
That I'm aware of. That people could actually go and be
they must have had a contract.
Pay their bills.
Pardon? Well, yeah, it was, but it was great back then. Omaha had 3 professional houses operating with a combined total of 1,200 seats. And those 3 theaters alone were doing 8 shows a week.
So is that the Playhouse and Chanticleer?
No, that was the Firehouse, the Westroads Dinner Theater, and the Talk of the Town Dinner Theater.
I don't know those. Okay.
Between the 3 places, we had 1,200 seats, and we were all, I mean, those places must have had contracts with Equity. Now, I don't know what their contract was, but because the Westroads, they used stars. They were sort of like what we talked about. What has become
the
situation at the
the new theater up there. Yeah. There's
And I'm sure Dick Solowitz worked at all 3 of them, and he was an Equity actor. So those places must have had some kind of an arrangement with Equity too.
For sure.
I see. Yeah. And that's how, when you helped found what is now the Theater Arts Guild.
Well, that was long before the Firehouse came along. That was when I was doing community theater.
Okay.
MAG, Metropolitan Art. Our award at the end of the year was called the Maggie.
The Maggie.
Yeah. Interesting. So that's probably why everyone really gravitated, because there was just, everyone was able to work. Can you imagine?
Oh, we had, yeah. I mean,
you know,
not only the theater, but the brigade, our singing waiters and waitresses, they did a hell of a show.
Mm-hmm.
And they made probably more money than the actors were making back then. It was a mecca for talent.
Yeah, and a lot of that talent is still around. I mean, even Dave Winger is still, he's doing radio.
Oh, yeah.
And all of that, so still able to find.
But they were good years in Omaha for theater. I get a chuckle out of the fact that, you know, there's a lot of, if you look at, there used to be a newspaper in town, but you look at the listings of the shows, and there's a lot.
Yeah.
And they think it's really great in Omaha now, but they have no idea what it was, you know, what it was really like. But I had a dear friend, an old guy named Rudyard Norton, who used to tell me that in his time, there were 17 theaters in downtown Omaha.
Really?
Yeah.
Yes. Equity theaters.
Well, I have no idea. I mean, these were probably vaudeville houses, and some of them were showing movies. But there were, some of them were doing, well, when Henry Fonda brought Mr. Roberts to Omaha, they worked at the Omaha Theater. Mm-hmm. Do you know where that was? That was on Douglas, I think, about between 15th and 16th, somewhere in there. I tried to save it.
So just north of Old Market?
No, we're just north of the Twin Towers in there. The Twin Towers, that was why it got torn down. They wanted a parking lot. So they tore this beautiful old movie house. But it wasn't a, it was like the Orpheum was built as a vaudeville house.
Yeah.
And the and actually the Omaha Theater, I loved it more than the Orpheum because it was shallower. It was it held a lot of people, but if you stood in that down in the it was intimate compared to the Orpheum. But those places all the Paramount, you know, they had dressing rooms backstage. There was, but my friend told me in his time, there were 17 theaters in downtown Omaha.
Wow, I didn't know.
But so I thought it was great when we had three houses,
right?
Plus all the community theater in town.
Yes.
Right. What do you think of theater now in Omaha?
Well, I, you know, I'm not a judge because I don't know what's going on. I am, I'm really off the grid, so I don't know what they're doing. I have a hunch they're not doing very well, but I wish them well. Interestingly, in the book, I wandered into it, went places I had no idea it was going to go. As I said, I had no plan when I started writing it, but it wandered into a discussion, an idea. It was like the clouds opened up as I was writing. I mean, I think I solved something that I'd pondered for at least 50 years. And I developed, I am hoping that I teased it enough in the book to spawn a conversation with people about how to really fund the arts in a way that would level the field and make it, put the emphasis back on where I think theater groups, their emphasis should be, and that is on the audience. Attracting an audience, entertaining an audience, and maintaining an audience. Anyway, I think they've wandered
too far.
You know, I don't know. I really don't know what's going on, so I don't want to make any big judgments, but I did, because it wasn't a level playing field.
Yeah.
We were a for-profit theater. And unfortunately, in our world today, in this world, for-profit has almost become a dirty word.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think that's where they've wandered into. And I think it wasn't a level playing field. And my idea that I stumbled into while writing this book, I think would not only be level the playing field, but I think it would be a renaissance for arts in Omaha. And if it was a renaissance for arts in Omaha, why wouldn't it work in Kansas City, Minneapolis, any other city? So anyway, that's my great hope, is what might come from that idea.
And it'd have to be a living wage. I mean, it would have to be something that people can actually pay the bills.
Well, I don't focus on that. I focus on the audience. I focus on tying the funding that arts organizations get to their ability to attract an audience. And that's, and once you do that, I also level the playing field. I eliminate the dividing line between for-profit and non-profit. Non-profit, it's motherhood, apple pie, and Chevrolet in my life. It's all good, nonprofit, you know. Well, this country was built on the Alger Hiss kind of story of there's that kind of elevated the for-profit or the making good rather than getting good at raising money.
Right. Yep. Or writing grants and all of that.
Yeah, you don't. Absolutely. If you do your job well, you don't need those people. I don't eliminate those people, but in my idea. But that's where I, in writing the book, like I say, when I started off, I had no idea what was going, and I think I covered some interesting moments in the theater's life, but I also lay out this challenge. Did you notice the four people I have on the back of the book?
No.
Read the quotes on the back of the book.
Oh, William Buckley Jr. from the National Review. Dear Mr. Mueller, how I wish half the people who insist they are writers wrote half as well. I have sent your good essay along to our editors and shall hope that they'll find space for a story in the subject, you'll be willing to annoy lots of people by being available for quotation. And this other one's Josh Logan. Oh, yep, you directed three or four.
He directed, yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah, for the Firehouse.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, and he's passed. This was a couple of years before
he
passed.
Well, those people are all dead, so they can't deny what they've what I've put on the cover.
To the good people of Omaha, my friend Dick Mueller has spent the past 15 years producing quality professional theater in your city, his city. I have been personally involved in a number of projects at his Firehouse Theater, and I find it a splendid theater. I'm very interested in doing anything Dick chooses to do. Oh, that's so sweet. And you've got one from Harold Hal Prince. Thank you for your comments. They're on the mark and encouraging. Thanks for your comments. Occasionally, I get tired of hearing myself. However, these things must be said, and there's so much reluctance to hearing them.
Now, do you know what that's a reason? I'll tell you what. I saw him on a Sunday morning show, and he was, you know, you know who he was.
I don't.
Well.
Hal Prince.
Hal Prince. He was, you know who Josh Logan was. Josh Logan was the king of Broadway for a period, many years.
Yeah.
Hal Prince was the king that followed.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. I can't. Yeah, you look, go Google him.
So he did.
You
Broadway.
You recognized him as soon as you saw him.
Phantom of the Opera.
Oh, you know
Sweeney
him. Okay.
Todd.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
And on and on.
Sorry,
and on.
I guess I should know that.
If you saw him, you would recognize him.
Anyway, I saw him on that morning show, and he was there, kind of kvetching about what we were all talking about recently about the state of the arts.
Yeah.
And it prompted me to write him along the same thing that I've been mulling for 50, 60 years. And that's his response to what I sent him. We had two or three, I never met him, but we had two or three letters back and forth.
Interesting.
And then, I don't read them all, but.
Yeah, Dale Wasserman.
Dale Wasserman, you know who he is? Man of La Mancha?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
How awesome is that? I'm not surprised that you have made the decision to take the Firehouse Theater nonprofit. Professional theaters in the country have fallen in hard times. Less and less it's possible for them to survive without civic support.
See, we were all talking. Hal Prince, Dale Wasserman, Josh Logan. We were all talking about the state of the arts in America. And
during this time that you were deciding on whether or not you wanted to be for profit, or?
Well, we ended up going nonprofit because I didn't see any route that, and we were on the road to that. Looking back, you know, it wouldn't have been a good fit for me, but might have saved the theater, and that was my purpose.
To stay for profit.
No, to go nonprofit.
To go nonprofit.
Anyway, it ultimately didn't work out because, it's in the book. You can.
I can't wait to read the book. I'm holding it, but I can't take it home, y'all.
Yes.
But I will, because one of the things we want to talk about is your book launch event.
Yes.
It's coming up.
A week from tomorrow.
April 21st.
Yep.
At the Upstream Brewing Company.
And you know what that place is?
Used to be the Firehouse Dinner Theater.
Yeah.
It was a firehouse before that. And it will be from 2 to 5. And there's going to be some video presentation as well.
Well, we're putting together a loop, you know.
Yeah.
Like you go to funerals or weddings and they play a video screen with loops. And this will be a compilation of pictures of stage productions interspersed with clips of, as I said earlier, we've got Christy Tucker doing a number in Guys and Dolls. I do a couple numbers. Pat Keys, my wife. Mary Jane, my ex-wife, is there.
Yeah.
There's even a little bit of Don Sparks doing Sneaky Fitch. So those will be interspersed.
Mm-hmm.
They were all pilfered illegally, as far as the union is concerned.
Right.
But thank God we did it.
Yeah.
Because we've got those. And I guarantee the people, if they're there, will love seeing what they did.
Absolutely.
40 years ago.
Absolutely. And I think it's something that everyone should know about the Firehouse and what the Firehouse did for for this town.
Gosh, yes.
And some of just the great people that are still working in the arts that started there.
Well, it was a good time.
Yeah. So your wife, Patricia, you married her after the firehouse.
Well, I think...
Kind of.
Yeah, I guess it was.
So she's had to kind of learn all of this with you.
And no, well, she worked there. She was, you mentioned Music Man.
Yeah.
She was Marion.
Okay.
Hey. Marion. She did a number of shows, yeah.
Okay, right. So she was aware, okay.
Yeah.
I was thinking you got married like early 90s or something, so I don't know what I was thinking.
I can't. Anyway, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, this is so exciting.
Well, thank you.
And I'm just so honored to meet you because your story has been in my life for as long as I can remember.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Because what are you, 21?
Yes, exactly, 21.
Right around there. You know,
I recall, going to the firehouse and just hearing all of these stories. And
did I tell you if you start me, I just keep going?
I absolutely love it. This is what we're here for.
Yeah, good.
We will hopefully be there with you on the 21st at Upstream Brewery.
I think so.
For your book launch. How exciting.
You'll be there to sign actually copies. Hosting the event for us. So, I mean...
Oh, that's so nice.
What they make on the bar, I don't know if they'll make their... But they're actually going to put out something to nibble on, and they're hosting. You know, Ron Samuelson manages. He's the managing partner of the Upstream.
Okay.
And he's actually in the book as a guest writer because he started his career in restaurants in the wine cellar, which was our hangout in the basement of the firehouse.
Wow. Okay.
So we go back a ways.
And I recall we had lunch there with Howard one day on the front
in the Upstream
porch. Yeah. And he was telling us
on the front porch. You mean the outside?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
You know the history behind that?
Well, he was telling us kind of where things used to be, the stairs and all of that, as we were out.
Well, let's talk about the outside, the sidewalk cafe.
Oh no!
Oh, right.
Sidewalk cafes where everybody we just knew it was illegal in Omaha to eat outdoors. Mm-hmm. And Rusty Harmson and I, we were good friends, and he ended up opening restaurants all over town. Mm-hmm. He had the Spaghetti Works at that time, and he had the Toad, Mr. Toad.
No.
We got together, and we really wanted to bring sidewalk cafes to Omaha.
Yeah.
And but it was illegal.
Isn't that crazy? What a crazy
thing. Yeah.
Well, we leaned on Mike Boyle, who was the mayor at the time, and he was a good guy, and he invited us up. I remember it was the day of a huge blizzard, and we met in his office, and he had all of the heads of the department of the city there in his office, and there's a blizzard outside the windows, and we're there to talk about eating outdoors.
Yeah, bro.
And how we could get that law changed. As it turned out, there was no law against sidewalk cafes.
Oh, really?
It was that the man in charge of the health department had a personal...
Didn't like it.
He feared flies or something.
Oh.
So he had enough power that for years and years it was assumed in Omaha that it was illegal. So Rusty opened a sidewalk cafe at Mr. Toad, and I opened that one at the wine cellar on the corner.
And I think the Mr. Toad one is still there,
yeah,
isn't
it's still
it?
There. Yeah. They're both still there.
Oh.
Those are the original outdoor restaurants or outdoor eateries in Omaha.
Wow.
Wow. Yeah.
Thanks to Mike Boyle.
That's great. I have a picture with him. I will bring it.
Oh, yeah?
That we took at Firehouse that night. I will bring it.
Yeah.
To the event on the 21st.
Well, I'll look forward to it.
Thank you so
That's
much
incredible.
For your time.
Thank you.
We are
yes,
so
thank you very
honored
much.
To talk to you. And everyone, rush out and get your book and come to the book opening on April 21st.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you.
The Firehouse Memoir, For an Entrepreneur in the Arts, From Nightclubs to Theater, 'Twas All Showbiz to Me, will have a book launch at the Old Firehouse, now the Upstream Brewery, on Sunday, April 21st, from 2 to 5 p.m. Stop on in to what is sure to be a festive reunion at the book launch, get a signed copy, and see so many of the people who made the Firehouse successful.
Thank you for listening and supporting the arts in the Platte River area and beyond. Please subscribe to our podcast so you are sure to catch all of our future episodes and join us on social media. See you next time on the Platte River Bard.